Sure did.
I need to get a water hose.
I'm recording.
Okay.
I need to get a water hose too. My water hose died, so I need to get a new water hose.
Yeah, well. We don't have one at all. I don't need one.
I think I have like the sum total of 3
water hoses.
Yeah, water hoses, and I need to.
Wait, what do you mean the sum total of 3?
When we moved in, there was one here.
It wasn't broken.
No, we had one from our other house, and then I bought another one.
Why do you
one.
Need another hose?
Okay, that's a very good question.
Well, if you have
the
3.
Hose died over here, so it was like,
is it?
It was. It's 150 feet long, but it's like retractable. So like when the water turns on, it stretches out, and when the water turns off, it compresses, like kind of like a unicorn, yeah. Not a unicorn,
like a snake water hose thing,
pretty much. And so when it got cold, water would get stuck.
And it froze it.
It froze it and busted holes in it. So now the water won't reach to the end of the hose.
It busted holes.
So I can't water my garden. I get water out there anyway, but I've got aphids and I really need to rinse them off.
What about your little sprayer thing? That doesn't work?
I've done that with like neem oil and soapy water and stuff, and they just keep coming back. So I need to like blast them really good, blast all the leaves really good, knock all the aphids off, and then come in with like a neem oil, peppermint, soapy water spray to deter them. Or if they do come back and they start chewing,
I told you, just introduce some ladybugs up in there.
They'll fly away. It's so freaking windy out here. I'll drop them out there, and then a gust of wind, like, vroom! They're like, bye, see you later.
Well, if they're in there eating them, they won't.
I know, that's what I thought too, but whatever. This is taking too much of my life.
Aphids. Your garden?
No, these aphids, they keep coming back. They're such a nuisance.
They're not going nowhere.
We here.
Exactly, because they're all, like, they're in the roses.
We in
They're
this.
In all kinds of things.
Yeah. So, Brandy?
Sunny?
How was your week?
My week was garbage. I had another garbage week. I didn't get anything done that I wanted to. It's like, for some reason, there is shit that is just like, it's getting in the way. Like, I have to take people to appointments, and I have to do other things, and so my newspaper, you know, I wanted to be done with this month's issue, with April's issue, last week. And so now, I'm going to just do an April-May issue.
April-May. Oh, yeah.
April-May issue. And hopefully, I can have that done and to print by April 5th. And that way it'll cover April and May.
Okay.
And then, you know, it's just, God, I just feel like I haven't been doing, and I haven't been like doing anything, like healthy for myself. I haven't been journaling. I haven't been doing my morning pages. I haven't been meditating. I've just been.
What's going on?
Farting around because I have to take care of everybody else's crap. It drives me crazy. Like, I so need an assistant.
Well, you do your morning pages in the morning, right?
You're supposed to do your morning pages when you after you wake up. You do a stream of consciousness writing for three pages. But I get up and I'm like, it's already, you know, late, and I'm like, shit, I have stuff to do, so I can't do my morning pages because I'm trying to do other stuff. So it's just like, you know, if I get up early enough, I can do it. I want to sign up for the gym, haven't done that. And so it's just, you know, just crap.
You gotta do it, do one thing, scratch it off your list. Sacrifice one thing to get one thing accomplished, scratch it off your list.
That's what I do, except I sacrifice everything, and then it's like, shit, yeah. I haven't done a damn thing.
You can't sacrifice everything. You know, I get it. Like, you gotta take this person here and that person there and do this and do that and obligations, but gotta fit it in your life.
I know, it sucks.
Yep.
Being a grown-up is crap.
Adulting is hard. That's a good shirt. Adulting is hard.
I feel like there's some stickers that say that.
I'm sure there are. Ugh. There's lots of stickers that say a lot of things.
So how was your week?
What did I do this week? It was good. It was a good week. We went to Bakersfield. That's what we did.
Oh, yeah. You went to that puppy thing, right?
I staged a dog biscuit pop-up.
You staged it? Okay. So what was that?
I went to a dog park in Bakersfield and got a table, brought my biscuits, and handed out biscuits to people and introduced them to Beauty's Biscuits and gave them pup cakes and stuff.
Oh, I thought you were like going to like a pet store or something.
No.
You were just like, I'm going to go hang out at the dog park today.
Dude, it was the best day ever. Like, you know, aside from driving to Bakersfield or whatever. We just hung out in the park. Like, I got a blanket and a table and some chairs and we just hung out and pet dogs and say how cute they were and just chit chat. And stuff. I actually sold some biscuits. I was very proud of myself. I gave everybody samples. Everybody that I saw that had a dog got some samples from me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then I went and got everything situated with my business name since I...
Oh, then did they change it? Like
I just had to pay again and just do it all over again. I know.
So now you have two business names.
Yeah, I do. But whatever. It's done. And then Crystal met up with us in Bakersfield. And we got to hang out, me, her, and Eric. That was my team.
Oh, that's fun.
Then we went to some dive bar in the middle of the day in Bakersfield. It was so dark and seedy, and it was the best.
Which one? You know what it's
Silver
called?
Silver Fox.
Do you know where it was located?
Downtown.
There's one that we used to go to.
Do you know where it was?
It was like, and it was like literally like... There was just a bar, like, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, no, it was dope. So we went and grabbed a drink, and that's when I was in the bar, and I was heading out, and that's when I found out that we got approved for Google Podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And I was, like, dancing in the bar, and all these people were, like, staring at me, and I was like, yay! Yeah, yeah!
Oh, my God.
I was so excited. I felt
like... They're like, what the hell is she doing?
This chick needs to calm the fuck down. Don't you know
it's
where
too
you are?
Early for this. Was it a bunch of old people in there?
No, there wasn't. It was a mixed group. Anyway. But, so that was good. And I just been really busy at work because my boss is gone. And then agents are gone. He went on vacation with his family. And, it's just, it's been like a good week, but it's been a long week. Oh, and then yesterday I went to freaking boxing at One Core.
Uh-huh.
And... But don't, like, when you hear boxing, you're like, oh, I'll do a boxing class. No, it's more like boot camp boxing.
Yeah.
And my whole freaking body is sore. Just because you can do burpees does not mean you should do them. Because I did the burpees and my knees are killing me. My abs hurt. My obliques hurt. My everything hurts.
Burpees are my go-to, like, when I want to burn a ton of calories really fast.
Yeah, my butt hurts. My arms hurt. I felt great, like, doing it. I was like, yeah, I was fired up. I'm like just boxing, jabbing, running, burping. It was good. It was a great workout. Like Liz really knows how to kick your ass into shape. So I'm happy I went. It was good.
That's cool. I need to go to the gym. I feel like a freaking Jabba the Hutt.
One Core has classes all the time. You should go to One Core.
I don't want to do classes. I just want to do. I want to lift weights and I want to do an elliptical machine.
Okay. Then you need to.
That's what I want to do.
And you should go to Roseman Health and Fitness.
So. No, I'm going to go to Cal City Health and Fitness or Cal City. Yeah, that's what Cal City Fitness because it's in my town that I live in, and I don't have to drive all the way to Roseman to go. And did you know they opened a new fitness center over here at Sky Park?
No.
Yeah, there's a fitness. We were drove by when we drove from Tashby today. We drove by there. I was like, "There's a freaking fitness center over here." Yeah. So I don't know what they I didn't look in there, but yeah, it's next to Roberto's Mexican food.
Damn. Okay, Roseman.
So Roseman's got what, 3 gyms now?
Yeah.
Well, there's 2 damn Dollar Trees. I mean, 2 Dollar Generals.
I want to do a way up. Well, I mean,
have you been to the other one over there?
Why?
We went over there because we were curious. And they actually have a bigger selection. Like, the store is bigger.
Okay.
And so they have more stuff, I think. But the selection over here on this side of town of the fairy garden stuff is much better. Because I think people doing fairy gardens are on the other side. And they picked over all that stuff over there. So.
Everybody must have been making fairy gardens.
They were making fairy gardens.
All right. Because
I was like, oh, all the stuff is, like, basically gone. But I do need a water hose, so I'm going to have to stop over and get
it. Oh, yeah, that's how this started, because I was like, what are we talking about? Yeah, I
told you. A water hose.
I need a water hose as well. All right, cool. So, I am Sunny Hepburn.
And I'm Brandy Fleeks.
And this is Book of Lies, the podcast. So, we've been I feel like we've been talking about this, and I feel like we've been promising we're going to do this episode. And so, today's the day.
Today's the day.
Today we are covering the Enron scandal, scheme, bankruptcy, shit show shenanigans. Enron.
The
largest corporate bankruptcy at its time. Like, during its time it was large. Now you give it to me. Like, I brought it over here.
Money.
Whatever.
My man.
All right, so let's talk about Enron. What are you here? What are you doing here, Kendall? Okay, guys, so we are covering Enron. So, Enron. Enron. So, I did my research with them. I watched Enron, the smartest guys in the room.
The smartest guys who fucked up.
Enron. And then I also got a lot of information from Wikipedia, because who doesn't? So I'm just going to kind of jump into it. We don't need to know all about...
You know, if you were writing a research paper, you would not be able to cite Wikipedia as a source.
Really?
Yeah, because anybody can make edits to Wikipedia.
That's true. So guess what? You don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. So in 1985, Kenneth Lay, this is a guy who... developed Enron, created Enron. He's the founder, CEO of Enron. So 1985, that's when Enron became what it was. He merged natural gas pipeline companies of Houston Natural Gas and InterNorth to form...
You said 1985?
Yes, 1985, to form Enron. So Enron is actually in Houston, Texas also. So, a lot of gas money out there.
Oil money,
that's what it's called.
Oil tycoons.
Yeah, oil tycoons. So, what do I have here? So, I actually just go, like, right into the scandal of it right here. So, I'll just tell y'all about it, about Enron.
Whoa, okay.
But what Enron was doing was they became the largest seller of natural gas in North America by 1992. And it was trading gas contracts. And they earned about $122 million before interest and taxes. They're also the second largest contributor to the company's net income. Wait. That doesn't make sense. Interest and taxes was the second largest contributor to the company's net income, which is weird.
Interest and taxes. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Basically, they were charging interest.
Mm-hmm.
And the taxes they were collecting.
Yeah. So, interesting.
Interesting.
That's interesting. So Enron was like this company, they were making a lot of money. People found a lot of value in this company. People were investing a lot in Enron stock.
Everybody needs energy.
They were selling gas to everybody. They were building gas, not gas things, but
pipelines.
Things like in India, which was a big flop, by the way. We'll talk about that.
Was that wind in India?
No, it wasn't wind.
Oh, okay.
It was not wind. Enron stock increased from the start of the 1980s until the year 1998 by 311%. Only modestly higher than the average growth in the Standard & Poor, whatever that is.
Standards & Poor.
What is that? Standard & Poor 500 index?
The Standards & Poor are the people who monitor, I was going to say business growth. They monitor income, the company's income that they generate through their, what do you call it? Their business dealings.
Hmm. Okay. So, interesting. It's so complex to me. So this is what happened. Let me just get to the point, because I get to the point eventually. So Ken Lay, CEO and founder of Enron, right? He's from Texas. He knows the Bush family very well. So they have a lot of faith in him. So they're investing in him. They're, you know, passing his name around. This guy, this guy, this guy. So he gets lots of...
He's interested. They're introducing him to other people.
Exactly. So he gets a lot of...
word of mouth?
Investors in Enron and what they're doing. However, Ken Lay is a gambler. He likes to gamble.
Okay.
So what
let's do that.
Let's do that. So apparently... energy, gas, oil, all that stuff was traded a lot, was gambled on a lot, the price of it.
What?
Yeah, it was a way to make money. So,
The price of energy today is going to be different than...
It's going to be this. And so, like, you know, he'd be like, okay, well, he would hire some people or, like, hey, you guys go do this for me, but don't tell me what happens, but make sure you bring home some money.
Don't tell me what you did.
Right. He wants to be blissfully ignorant about things. So Ken Lay also played the, oh, I didn't know what was going on in my company card.
I didn't know what they were doing.
While everything was going on around him, he was just like, oh, well, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. Ooh.
He's one of those people that's like, okay, I can't be in the room while you guys are discussing this. And
pretty much.
Out the room. Okay.
Pretty much, yeah. So he knew there was some shady shit going on. There was lots of gamblers that he had hired who would bet money and lose money. So he has someone going.
Money? Okay, hold on. They were betting money on what? Like, whose money was it? The company's money?
It's the company's money.
Okay.
It's Enron's money that they're betting on.
Were these professional gamblers?
No, they were, like, traders.
Okay.
And they would, like...
Just bet?
Pretty much.
Like, they were playing the stock market, but with freaking... energy?
With energy, exactly. So, that happened with Enron... that was just one thing, Ken Lay and his behavior. So that I just brought that up just so you know the type of guy he is and what he's willing to do. I'm just saying. Like, and they would bring on people to the company because they would buy other smaller companies. Like, they bought PGE in Oregon. In Oregon, it's like, I don't know what it stands for. But
Pacific Gas and Electric?
Maybe something PG&E? Like that. It wasn't PG&E. It was just called PG, and it was a specific, like, branch in Oregon. Okay. They would buy companies here, natural gas company here, wind company here. They were buying up everything because they're giants.
Yeah, when I lived in Bakersfield for that short amount of time, I worked for a construction company, and we were building buildings for Enron Wind. And that was what the project was called, Enron Wind.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at the time, I was like, 19. I was like, okay, whatever.
Right. Ah. So, kind of like what I was saying with the revenue and the sketchiness of it. So, Enron and other energy suppliers earn profits by providing services such as wholesale trading and risk management in addition to building and maintaining electric power plants, natural gas pipelines, storage, and processing facilities. So when accepting the risk of buying and selling products, merchants are allowed to report the selling price as revenue and the product's cost as cost of goods and sold. So what they're doing is they're not reporting any losses. All they're doing is reporting revenue. And they're saying, okay, we're worth this. We're making this much money. We're doing this. We're doing that. So, service providers, when classified as agents, are able to report trading and brokerage fees as revenue, although not for the full value of the transaction. So, and they were trading with lots of different companies. Although trading companies such as Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch used a conventional agent model for reporting revenue, Enron instead selected to report the entire value of each of its trades as revenue. So, they were just reporting revenue. Nobody was showing any reporting.
They weren't showing any loss.
They weren't showing any losses, and they were fudging their revenue.
Okay, so again, that's sort of like Bernie Madoff, just reporting revenue and no losses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just keep going up and up and up and up and up.
Up and up and up and up and
right.
up and up. And if you watch that movie, The Smartest Guys in the Room, there's so many moving parts to this business, to this company, and like its downfall. So a couple of key players in it was this guy called Lou Pye, and Lou Pye was the CEO of the EES,
which is what?
Which is like some bullshit that
energy something something.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. What was it? I just write things down and I don't go back and realize what I'm writing. I'm like, what?
What is this? These are letters. I need to know words.
So this guy, his name is Lu Pai. He's the CEO of EES. So, and we just said Inland Energy Services. Moving forward, we'll be calling it EES. They brought this guy in, Chinese-American businessman, former executive of Enron, Lu Pai. So from March 1997 until January 2001, he was also... What the fuck?
What the fuck?
That's how long he worked for Enron. Anyway, so this guy was obsessed with the stock price. So they brought him in to drive up the price of the stock, and that was his obsession, was the stock price.
Wait, what? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, because I feel like when they brought on these executives, they gave him a bunch of stock.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then the stock price just kept going up and up, and that's where they were valued at, is what their stock price was.
So they basically generically inflated the fucking the stock value.
Pretty much.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, that is illegal, but go ahead.
It is illegal. And the funny thing about Lu Pai is, like, he was a very serious, button-up guy, obsessed with the stock price, just, like, running around this company, handling business, driving up the price. And apparently he had an obsession with, can you guess?
White chicks.
Strippers.
Same thing. Same thing. Because, you know, there's that stereotype about Asian men liking white chicks. And, like, yeah, strippers are, like, as you know, we've been watching Sons of Anarchy. And there's a part in there where they get these Chinese businessmen to come in. And then they have the porn stars. So, yeah.
They love strippers.
It's something about blondes. That's what it is.
They want to dominate them. Maybe. But, and then also, Lu Pai is a key player, and then also is Jeffrey Skilling. He is, at the time, he becomes the CEO of Enron. So, he's brought in by Ken Lay to be CEO of Enron. So, when Ken Lay comes in, not Ken Lay, I'm sorry, Jeffrey Skilling comes in, and he changes everything about Enron. So, that's when they start going into, like, different avenues, like wind energy, solar energy.
Yeah.
He brings in all these different agents, these brokers, he brings in, Lu Pai, and they are just like, they're animals. They go in there and they're driving up the stock price. They are just reporting wins. And Jeffrey Skilling was able to do something called, mark to market.
What is that?
So mark to market reporting is, let me explain that, because that kind of baffled me a little bit.
That sounds weird.
It sounds weird, but it was like, once they were able to accomplish that, they were like, oh shit, mark to marketing. And it was the way they were reporting their numbers. So it was mark to market accounting. So in Enron's natural gas business, the accounting had been fairly straightforward. The company listed actual costs of supplying the gas and actual revenues receiving from selling it. However, when Skilling joined the company, he demanded that the trading business adopt a mark-to-market accounting.
Mark-to-market.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
I'm going to explain it, citing that it would represent the true economic value. So Enron became the first non-financial company to use the method to account for its complex long-term contracts. So mark-to-market accounting requires that once a long-term contract was signed, income is estimated as the present value of the net future cash flow. So it's like, I get this contract with you for $1 million, but let's say it's over the course of a year or 2 years or whatever. But the second I get that contract signed, or, you know, that commit, I'm counting that revenue towards what we're valued at. So I get a $1 million contract, I've got $1 million. But let's say the shit falls through, let's say it doesn't happen, let's say things change, let's say, you know, the market fluctuates, it doesn't matter, I've got this $1 million because I've got this contract. So it's like a good faith. They're like, okay, yeah, sure, we trust you.
It's like a promissory note.
Pretty much. So often the viability of these contracts and their related costs were difficult to estimate. So due to the large discrepancies of attempting to match profit and cash, investors were typically given false or misleading reports. So these motherfuckers never gave any reports. they were like, oh, we don't have it. You don't need to see our numbers. They would say that the way, because people were like, well, how is this working? How are you guys making money? We're not seeing this, but all I'm just seeing is revenue. Like, what's really going on? They're like, the way we run is kind of like a black box. Like a black box on an airplane.
What?
You know it's there, but you can't see what's going on inside it. So just shut the fuck up and take what we say at its value. Like, be quiet. Shh.
Oh, God. Okay.
Shh. Black box.
Shh.
Black box.
Don't ask any questions.
Don't ask any questions. Just look at my hands.
Oh, my God.
So there was this one situation with Jeffrey Skilling. He was on the phone with some reporter. And some reporter's like, hey, man.
Some reporter.
Some guy. They're like, hey, dude, can you show us some numbers? Can we see some reporting? And then he's given that song and dance, black box. You don't need to see our numbers.
Right.
And the guy's like, you've never showed any freaking reporting. What the hell? And he's like, yeah, okay, well, this interview's over. Have a nice day.
Uh-huh.
Asshole. At the end of the call, asshole, and he gets it on tape. And so.
Wow.
So they're like, you fucking dick, you need to go apologize. And he's just like, man, that guy's an asshole asking me all these damn questions.
This is job. That, hello, when you're a journalist, your job is to ask questions.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's to report the truth.
The truth.
Fucking idiot.
And the truth was not being reported.
It's amazing to me how many people try not to get reporters to do their job. The First Amendment protects reporters so that they can do their jobs, but people just... They try to obstruct.
Mm-hmm.
They try to obstruct.
Yeah. So he was trying to obstruct. I mean,
obstruct.
So then, in regards to this mark-to-market accounting, in future years, the profits could not be included, so new and additional income had to be included for more projects to develop and additional growth to appease investors. So as one Enron competitor stated, if you accelerate your income, then you have to keep doing more and more deals to show the same or rising income, despite potential pitfalls from the SEC. Well, yeah, the SEC approved this accounting method for Enron.
Okay, because so that's what I was like. Is the SEC fucking monitoring their asses or what?
No, they approved. SEC, they approved it. So they approved it and the accounting method for Enron and its trading of natural gas futures contracts in January 30, 1992. However, Enron later expanded its use to other areas in the company to help it meet Wall Street projections. So they're like, ooh, you know, we've been approved for this. So they got their approval for natural gas, but then they started doing it in, you know, other branches of the company or whatever. So for one contract in July 2000, Enron and Blockbuster Video signed a 20-year agreement to introduce on-demand entertainment to various U.S. cities by the end of the year.
On-demand.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, the funny thing is, like, I remember thinking, like, why didn't Blockbuster, like, step up their game and, you know, get with Netflix and they got left behind,
on the freaking streaming services.
Right. I think I seen an app for them, but whatever. They were trying something and they tried to do some shit with Enron. They got fucked. Anyway, after several pilot projects, Enron recognized the estimated profits of more than $110 million for the deal. Even though analysts questioned the technical viability and the market demand for the service, when the network failed to work, Blockbuster withdrew from the contract. However, Enron still continued to recognize the future profits, even though the deal resulted in the loss. So they could have had potentially $110 million from Blockbuster in a 20-year contract.
Mm.
The shit wouldn't fucking work. There was no need for broadband in 2000 because no one was streaming. But that's when, like, Netflix stepped on the scene also. So people stopped going to Blockbuster and renting movies. Netflix started mailing shit to them, you know?
Yeah.
And the deal just didn't, you know, come to fruition. Yet Enron was like, we got your money. And they didn't really get their money.
They didn't really get their money.
It did not happen.
There was no money to be had.
Right. And then there was another key player in the Enron thing. It was their accountant. And their accountant... Was it the accountant? Who was it? It was somebody else. This motherfucker. Who
Isn't
is
there
it?
A movie called...
Andy Fastow. So Andy Fastow was the CFO. So he's the chief financial officer of Enron. So this guy, This guy had a business on the side, and it was called LJM. And so what Enron was doing was they partnered up with LJM, quote, like I'm doing quotation marks, they partnered up with LJM. LJM is on the side getting contracts and deals with banks. So with Chase Bank, with other financial institutions, gaining contracts with them, selling some type of service or trading or doing something with Enron. So LJM is acting like as, oh, so also Fast Al, he was hiding money all over the place because so people couldn't really track the numbers. So he's like, oh, there's this company here, we're going to move money here, we're going to move
money there. Shell companies or like just like real companies?
Shell companies, different companies in LJM, the partners that LJM is bringing in, the different banks that they're doing business with. It's freaking, you know, walnut shells moving around, sleight of hand, just moving it here, moving it there. Just clever ways to... That's
three-card Monty.
Pretty much. So, that's going on that side. And he's hiding the fact that Enron is now $30 billion in debt. And they're not... Like, they're having all these great ideas, and they want to do this, and they want to do that. But what's happening is they're losing money. And one deal that they lost a lot of fucking money in was a deal in India. And what was supposed to happen is... They built a freaking, what was it? They built a natural energy company in India, and it failed because India could not afford to pay for the energy that they were offering over there. So they lost billions of dollars to build this fucking, you know, natural gas company, this natural energy company in India, and the Indians couldn't pay for it.
Wait. Okay.
It was dumb.
So what do? Did they just go over there and they were like, we're just going to do this and then you pay us later?
This
like,
is a great idea. We're going to go ahead and do this.
Like, I don't understand. You don't have any guarantee that you're going to get paid for your work, right? Mm-hmm. So what are you doing?
They built it and they lost money doing it.
Dumb.
They lost money fucking doing it. And then when I was telling you about the freaking Ken Lay... And, like, the gambling people that he has going on his company, there was this thing called Valhalla, and it was gambling for Enron. So they were betting on the cost of oil. So that's exactly what they were doing. They were betting on the cost of oil, gambling for Enron. He sent those people out to get money for the company to bring money in. But they would turn around.
Those people.
They would lose money. They eventually just, like, continued to lose money. It was dumb. It was dumb. And then the broadband thing failed with Blockbuster. That fell through that didn't go through.
The cracks.
Yeah. So then all of a sudden, they're fucking, like, doing weather trading. So, and a lot of this
What is weather trading?
Betting on the fucking weather, pretty much.
Okay.
It's stupid. It's fucking dumb.
So I'm gonna bet $5 million that it's gonna rain tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm gonna bet $25,000 that tomorrow is gonna be a dry day. Like, what?
It's dumb. It's dumb. Pretty much. But the funny thing is, like, just kind of how, like, Ken Lay was like, oh, I did not know this was going on in my company. That's kind of the same thing that's going on with...
I do not know.
Yeah, Jeffrey Skilling, who is the current CEO of the company. But he's seeing that shit ain't doing what it's supposed to do. And there was, like, this one situation where they weren't going to make their number. And they're like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We're not going to be able to have this money and survive, blah, blah, blah. And then they got a fucking contract with California under Gray Davis. And so
that's when the rolling blackouts started.
Exactly. The fucking rolling blackouts. So
I remember that. That was the year 2000.
It was a little before 2000 because what they did was they deregulated the energy or something like that. Deregulated energy. And so they got into bed with Enron. Enron was causing rolling blackouts because...
Actually, I feel like that was 2001.
No.
Go ahead.
No, it wasn't, because I'll tell you why. Anyway, they were doing trading fucking the cost of energy that day. So they've got these guys, they're freaking sales guys, and all of their phone calls are recorded. And these guys are fucking assholes. They're like, hey, they would call their freaking, their plants. And their gas companies, and they would say, hey, could you turn off the gas for a little bit. So when there's demand, supply and demand, where there's not supply and there's demand, the cost,
the cost
goes up
more.
And so they're making fat checks and $1 million checks because they're trading all this energy to California. Because we're like, oh, we need this. There's blackouts. What's going on? And all over California. So fucking Enron stole pretty much $30 billion from California because they were facilitating these things. And then there was a fire that happened. There's always a fire that fucking happens.
In California.
In California. And some of the...
Which fire?
I'm not sure which one it was, but some power plants were burning down. And, like, you could hear some of the traders on the phone. They're like, hey, man, what's going on over there? They're like, oh, there's a fire. And he's like, oh, yeah, burn, baby, burn. Let it burn.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, they were just talking all kinds of shit. They're like, man, this poor old lady, she can't afford a bill. They're like, oh, well, fuck her. Pretty much. Pretty much. You know, they're just like, oh, well, we're making money. We're trading this. They're a bunch of fucking assholes. And because this happened and all this stuff was going down under Gray Davis's watch, guess who came in? The fucking governor.
Yeah.
And so Enron and their behavior and the deal that we got, we as Californians, the deal that, you know, happened with Enron under Gray Davis caused us to hate him, then to bring in the freaking governor.
Yeah, that's when there was a turnover and went from Democrat to Republican.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shit show. Anyway, so... and they're paying these people all this freaking money. Let's talk about all this money that these people are getting. So, Lupi...
Yes. I was like, which people? The employees?
The employees, the executives. Mm-hmm. Because that was a part of the scandal. So, the scandal really was that when this company...
They were giving themselves raises, right?
They weren't giving themselves raises, but they knew like that they the company wasn't valued for shit. There was this article that went out in the,
like, one of them had, like, some crazy-ass umbrella stand or something.
an umbrella stand?
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Lupi. So, Lupi had this, like, pump-and-dump mentality. He'd build up the stock price, and then he'd fucking dump it.
Right.
And, like, when he left Enron with $250 million. Just gotta go, bye. He divorced his wife, and he married his stripper pregnant girlfriend.
Oh, my God. He had a pregnant stripper girlfriend.
Yep. He was like, boop, boop, gotta go.
Oh, what whoop, a whoop. Dumb fuck.
And, you know, as Enron's going, and, you know, the company's flourishing, and everybody's doing well, they're like, yeah, buy Enron stock. Put it in Enron, Enron, stock, you know. Uh-huh. All that was encouraged. But while that's happening, they're encouraging people to invest in Enron. Their executives are dumping their stock because they know that the company isn't going to be worth shit. Because
it's garbage.
Yeah, I feel like at its height, it was worth $90 a share.
Mm-hmm.
And, fucking, who else got fucking paid? Ken Lay, he, again, was the CEO when the company shut down. Ken Lay came back as CEO. He took off with $300 million. And, right before...
I like how it sounds like he just, like, packed a freaking suitcase full of money and left.
I'm gonna be leaving with my money. Thank you. Bye-bye. Gotta go. Jeffrey Skilling? What's his name? Skilling?
Skilling.
Jeffrey Skilling. He kind of reminded me of Elizabeth Holmes from his, like, oh, it's a black box, don't pay attention to what's going on here, blah, blah, blah.
We don't
blah.
Need to tell you anything.
Sleight of hands, shaky shake. He reminded me of Elizabeth Holmes with his behavior. He dipped out, he gave himself another $200 million in stock. So these assholes are dumping the stock, knowing the company's sinking, but they're telling their employees everything's fine.
Of course. That's how you do.
Everything's fine. Don't worry. No. So, this is what fucking happens.
What fucking happens, honey? What fucking happens?
This is what fucking happens. Right here, guys. My back hurts. I'm so sorry.
This is what happens. My back hurts.
This is what happens. Your back hurts.
Dealing with these assholes at Enron.
Yeah, so they're misleading people. They're like, hey. Oh, yeah, so it was Fortune Magazine. So Fortune Magazine Fortune Magazine did an article saying, is Enron overpriced or something? Is Enron stock overpriced?
Inflated.
Is it? It is, because no one saw any fucking numbers. And so that's what kind of shed the light on what was going on. They started looking into them and investigating them. SEC finally came in and started doing their fucking job.
Don't trust the government, people.
You really can't.
Like, you can't rely on the government for shit. That's for damn sure. Look what the fucking's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what's going on now?
The Mueller report came out.
Yeah,
Well, he gave it to, whatchamacallit, the attorney guy.
Yeah, so...
FBI guy, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, so Enron was full of shit. So Enron's shareholders lost $74 billion in 4 years before the company's bankruptcy. Enron had nearly $67 billion... actually, as Enron had nearly owed $67 billion to its creditors, employees, and shareholders, received limited, if any, assistance aside from severance from Enron. To pay its creditors, Enron held auctions to sell assets, including art, photographs, logo signs, and pipelines.
Uh-huh.
In May of 2004, more than 20,000 of Enron's former employees won a suit of $85 million for compensation of $2 billion that was lost in their pensions. So when the company went bankrupt. It happened like overnight. They were just like, oh, you guys aren't worth shit. They dug in their ass. There was no fucking money. They went bankrupt. And when you have your 401k invested in a company,
yeah,
and you've retired with the company and they go belly up, so does your money.
Yeah. You don't get any money.
You don't get any money, and it sucks. So there was $2 billion lost in pensions. So for the settlement, the employees each received about $3,100 the next year. Investors received another settlement from several banks of $4.2 billion. So they were getting their money back somehow, the employees and the stakeholders. But over 20,000 people lost jobs. They lost their 401ks. This one guy said... He was one of these truck drivers in Oregon. He said he had, like, I want to say, like, $200K in his 401K with Enron.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, when all of these major executives were trading their stock, the employees could not trade their stock. Their shit was frozen. So they couldn't do anything. They couldn't move their money as the stock is plummeting.
What?
So this guy fucking says that he had, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in his account. Right. Once he got the opportunity to cash out, it was worth $1,200.
Oh, that sucks.
$1,200.
$1,200. That's bullshit.
Eat a dick. You know what?
Yeah.
Eat a dick.
That's just not even cool.
Shit.
Like, what? You fucked over all your fucking employees,
mm-hmm,
man.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they do. Like, these people, all they see is money. And they care not about their freaking employees.
They care not.
They are completely fucking immoral. Well,
they are really immoral. And, like, the light was really shown on Jeffrey Skilling, who was the CEO, right? So he knew it was turning into a shit show before the company even filed for bankruptcy. He left 6 weeks before that happened. He was like, okay, guys, I'm quitting. I'm not going to be CEO anymore, but he was very aware of the stability of the company.
The instability
and the current stability of the company. So he knew if he left that he would have like a few weeks for the company to be okay and not look like he sunk the ship.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So he cashed out his stock.
Fucking asshole.
Uh-huh. So,
somebody should... Never mind. Go ahead.
And so now, Jeffrey Keith Skilling... is now a convicted felon.
Uh-huh. Yep.
He was the former CEO of Enron Corporation during the Enron scandal. In 2006, he was convicted of federal felony charges related to Enron's collapse and eventually sentenced to 24 years in prison.
Eventually. Eventually.
I feel like he did 14 years. So penalty, he did 14 years in federal prison. And uh-huh. So I think he's still in.
Good.
Hang on. Okay.
They all need to be in jail.
Yep, yep, yep. In 2013, the unit, the blah, 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 reached a deal with Skilling, which resulted in a 10-year, resulted in 10 years being cut from his sentence, reducing it to 14 years. He has moved to a halfway house in August of 2018 and released from federal custody in February. He just got released from federal custody. What's that? He served 12 years. Yeah.
He just got released.
He served 12 years. You deserve it, you son of a bitch. Mm. Like, you fucked so many people. He just got out.
In the ass with no lube.
He let this all happen. Like, he let it all. So he was found guilty on one count of conspiracy, guilty on one count of insider trading,
uh-huh.
guilty on 5 counts of making false statements to auditors, guilty on 12 counts of securities fraud, and not guilty on 9 counts of insider trading. Enough said. 12 years. 12 fucking years. Alright, that's fine. Whatever. Oh, and then Ken Lay, the guy who created the company, he was due for sentencing in, like, I think it was June of 2006. And uh-huh. then he died.
Good. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like an asshole, but...
yeah, good. July. It was July. Actually, it was July 5th of 2006. He died. So,
died of what?
Of being an old fucking man. He was old.
Oh, he was old?
Yeah.
I didn't know what his age was, but I know, like...
Yeah, Lay left behind a legacy of shame.
Characterized... And you know how Asian cultures feel about that.
Well, this guy's not Asian.
Ken Lay. Oh, I thought you were talking about that other guy.
Lu Pai?
Yeah.
Hi, baby. Come here. Come here.
Okay, I got you.
You okay? Okay. So, yeah, he died. Let's see.
You're shaking the bed.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Ken Lay died on July 5th, 2006, while vacationing in Colorado. Son of a bitch.
Mm. That's special.
Must be nice.
Okay, really?
Must be nice.
Oh, my God. Oh, my old boss died on vacation, too.
He had a heart attack. He had a heart attack.
I'm like, my old boss died on vacation, too.
That sucks.
Yeah, he was in Mexico with his wife.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
You want that?
And he wasn't even... He was only, like, 55.
Four. Okay. I got you. Yeah, man, that's messed up. But Ken... I mean, honestly, people like to point the finger at, Skilling. He was doing dirty. So was Lay. And then the freaking, this is the funny thing. Andy Fastow, the CFO,
uh-huh.
the one who had, like, the different companies and was moving the money around, they tried to play this guy as the fall guy. They were like, oh, no, we had a rogue employee who did all of this. Andy Fastow, I cannot believe it. You know, so he went down first.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, oh, this is the game we playing?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I got you. I got you, and I got you. And he sung yeah, on everybody else.
Of course. Don't fucking throw me under the bus.
Yeah.
Fucker and shit. You coming right up under that bus with me.
Come on. Boom, boom.
Okay.
Run over together. Yeah.
I will drag you on under that bus with me.
Mm-hmm. There were so many moving parts in this, but that was my sordid attempt to do it. Enron.
Yay. To do Enron justice.
Yeah. It happened so long ago. But at the time, it
wasn't that long ago.
Well, at the time that Enron was the largest corporate bankruptcy.
Well, those Enron assholes, yeah.
And some traders went down too for insider trading and being douchebags.
God, they're so stupid. People don't understand. You're going to get caught. And when you get caught, you're going to go to jail. So stop trying to be fucking sneaky. Like, the only reason I have never committed a murder is because I would get caught.
Is that the only reason
why? Yeah, pretty much. What is the lesson here? What is the lesson from Enron?
The lesson is stop lying.
Stop lying.
Stop lying about what you're worth, like, what you're valued at.
you know, and it's all about the stock at the end of the day when you become like a publicly traded company.
Yeah.
You know, if your stock is worth all this and you've got a bunch of it and you know you ain't shit, flip it and get your money while you can, I guess.
I just think it's amazing, these people. They just do this. I mean, they have no conscience. They have no conscience. Like, you're screwing people out of their money. Cut the old lady's freaking energy off, really? Like, come on now. I feel like these people who run these companies, because it's always some asshole who runs a company, want to make their money. They want to get rich quick, or they're already rich and they want more money. Oh. And it's just like...
I forgot to mention the whistleblower. Oh, shit. Sorry.
What?
Yeah. Sorry. Let me tell you who she was.
Oh, my gosh. I would have ruined everything because we didn't really talk about how it happened. Okay, so...
Yes. How did it happen?
How they came to a crumble, the cookie crumbled, Sharon Watkins...
Watkins.
Sharon Watkins. So, so she joined Enron, Sharon Watkins of Tomball, Texas. So, she was the American former vice president of corporate development at Enron.
Uh-huh.
So she was called to testify before committees on, the Senate and U.S. House of Representatives at the beginning of 2002. Primarily about her warnings to Enron's then CEO Kenneth Lay about the accounting irregularities. So she stepped in, somebody left the company, and then she was able to get a look at the books. And she was like, hey Ken, there's a lot of accounting irregularities in all of these financial statements. It's when Skilling left. So when Jeffrey Skilling left, she kind of stepped in. And so she's an accountant. She's looking at the numbers, and they're not jiving. Mm-hmm. And so she mentions it to Lay, to Ken Lay, the then CEO, that, hey, there's something going on here. And then I guess she sat on this information for, like, 5 months, and then they criticized her. Like, oh, how come you didn't say anything sooner?
Right.
What's going on? Mm-hmm. Boo, 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 boo,
boo, boo, boo. Like, it's all your fault.
Yeah, exactly.
No, really.
My fault. Get out of here. But she's the girl, Sharon Watkins. She's the one who noticed the irregularities, that there was money moving here, moving there, but there was no money coming in. It was just reporting the money, but it's like, where's the money? And she brought it to the CEO's attention. He was like, girl, calm down. It's all good. Don't worry. We do accounting a little differently around here. And she's like,
numbers. That's not accounting.
numbers are all the same. What are you talking about, bro? And so then... she fucking blew the whistle.
Ooh. Well, I find it to be amazing. And one day, all these assholes who have all this money and just, all they do is just, they want to just get more money. Like, seriously.
They're addicted to gambling. I'm not saying everybody's addicted to gambling, but these guys were. They love to gamble. They're in Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas.
Bull. You know what's bigger? Not their fucking jail sentences. Bullshit. This is bullshit. It's bullshit. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your thumbs up for the week?
Oh, my thumbs up for the week. I don't have one. Let's see. My thumbs up for the week is that I put together that stupid freaking shelf, that cubby shelf thing. Now I can organize my office a little better. But again, I have so much stuff that I need to do that is just overwhelming. And I feel like... I just feel like everything is working against me.
It's going to be okay.
So, that's what happens. But okay. I'm alright. I'll be alright. I will be okay. I will be okay. And my eye is hurting. Oh, no. So, what's your thumbs up?
I'm really excited for spring.
Yeah.
I really am. Oh, yeah, I decided I'm going to have a party for my birthday.
Yeah.
I'm excited about planning that and inviting folks. Oh, yeah.
Doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we should cut it at that.
Cool.
So I am Sunny Hepburn.
And I'm Brandy Fleeks.
And this is
Book of Lies,
the podcast. Say bye, Bren. Say bye-bye. Say bye-bye. She's waving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, bye. Bye.
I'm not speaking today.
I know. You want to go outside? You want to go outside?
Okay.
Outside.
Okay, say bye. It's like that.